Welcome to Building Ideas, exceptional people discussing inspired experiences that create an enduring impact on our communities. Building Ideas is presented by MSA Design. To learn more about MSA, visit us on the web at www.msaarch.com.
This is Bill Baker. Welcome to the podcast today, where we have a Midwestern design leader. John Jaskiewicz joins us as the president-elect of the Cincinnati chapter of the American Institute of Architects, one of the oldest component chapters in the organization in the United States, being founded in 1870. He is also a project architect at MSA Design, where he works on many of the firm's key institutional and higher education projects. He did his undergraduate degree at the University of Cincinnati, home of the Bearcats, and did his Master's of Architecture at Virginia Tech. Go Hokies! He's active throughout the design community and is a proud husband and father. So welcome to Building Ideas, today's exceptional person, John Jaskiewicz. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and your path that led you to where you are today?
Oh, man. Where to start? Can I start with kindergarten? Is that okay? It really started there. No, I have kind of an interesting path, I feel like, because I've moved around a lot growing up and had some different experiences. I was very, it's funny because whenever I tell people that I was a very passive person growing up, they're a little surprised because I love to talk so much now. But I think it's because I bottled it up for so long. But I was always an observer, so I moved around a lot, like I said, growing up as a kid. And I had to pay attention to stuff a lot more to kind of fit in. I felt like I had to sort of emulate, because when I say I moved a lot, it wasn't between cities and towns in Ohio. I moved from Los Angeles to Omaha, Nebraska, to Findlay, Ohio, to Cincinnati, to Boston, to Virginia, then back to Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So I sort of had to pay attention and learn how to adapt. So I feel like I'm a bit of a chameleon. So because of that, I was always, you know, keeping an eye on stuff and paying attention and watching human interaction and the way people work together, and, you know, even just observing the places I was at. And it's funny because the reason I became an architect was because after when we moved from Los Angeles to Omaha, we were in downtown Los Angeles, and I saw all the buildings there, and I moved to, at the time, Omaha, which wasn't as booming as it is now. There's a building there called the Woodman Tower, mm-hmm. and at the time, it just stuck out like a sore thumb, and it would be dwarfed in the Los Angeles skyline. But because the Woodman Tower, which is, and I love the Woodman Tower, it's very special to me, but it's an ugly building, and it looked so massive compared to the rest of the skyline. It was so dominating. It was just such an authority, and that's when I started to pay attention to buildings, and I thought, uh-huh. man, that's just a very special thing, and it's so prominent to everything that we see. Whereas in Los Angeles, you just see a big skyline of buildings, you know?
Yeah.
And, I think the skyline changed a lot over the last 10, 15, 20 years since I moved away from there. But, it was something really special, it felt like. So, and then, you know, went through the program at UC. When I graduated from there, then I applied for grad schools all over the place. And this is where the story kind of gets a little more interesting. I moved to Boston originally, but I moved there during a really bad time in the economy. So I had to transfer out of the Boston Architectural College. And I wanted to go to Virginia Tech really bad.
Go Hokies.
And, yeah, I was declined admission in the beginning. And I said, you know, I was so mad. At the time, I was really mad. I said, I want to know why. You know, I should be able to go to that program. So I said, I'm going to call them and tell them what I think. And I said, you know what? I want my portfolio back. I spent $150 on that portfolio. I'm going to go back there and get it back. So I was visiting a friend in Richmond. I said, I'm going to drive to Blacksburg. On the drive to Blacksburg to get my portfolio back, I said, I'm going to take a different approach to this. And I said, I'm going to tell them that they made the biggest mistake that they've ever made. And I'm just going to apply again next year. So you might as well let me in this time.
Nice.
So I scheduled a meeting with the chair of admissions under a false name, because I was nervous he wouldn't take it if he saw my name related it back to somebody that he already declined admission. And then a week later, I got an email saying I was granted admission into the program. Because the email was worded really funny. It was like a, do you accept or do you decline or want to attend Virginia Tech? And there was a yes or no button. Like, man, there's a lot riding on making sure I interpret this correctly. But so I accepted and word about it to anybody for the whole 2 years I was there. And then the day I was having my thesis book signed by my panel, which included that chair of admissions, because he was on everybody's thesis panel, I said, you know what? I never asked you why did you let me in? Or was this a mistake? Did you mean to let me into this program? Am I actually getting a degree? And I said, well, you know, why'd you let me come here? And he looked at me and he signed the book. It was like it was straight out of the movie. He looked up and he said, because you wanted to be here. And he walked away. Like that was, that was cool.
What or who have been some key influences or exceptional people who influenced you in your life and your path?
I say that because of my weird little observation and always watching people and listening tactic to life, there's been a lot of people that have had much more of an impact than they probably realize. You know, just as well as I do that, I have no problem saying, hey, I like what you're doing. I think you're an interesting person. I think you have an interesting story. Tell me, can we sit down and talk about your story and maybe you can help me out and point me in the right direction for what I'm trying to accomplish. I'm constantly just kind of nudging people and asking for advice. But I say the real aha moment for me that I can do something great and at least try to be inspirational and exceptional was a teacher that I had in high school. It was football season, and I was a terrible football player.
What'd you play? What position did you try to play?
Defensive line, but I have no idea why. I did not have the instinct. I was a pretty good baseball player, but I had never had the instinct of football. And I joined the football team for all the wrong reasons. On Thursdays, we were allowed to let girls wear our jerseys to school, and I wanted to be able to, you know, tell a girl, hey, you can wear my football jersey on Thursdays. So it really was not to be good at football. I never really wanted to be good. But I was always a bigger, stronger person, so football kind of came easy to me. I never got great at it by any means. But there was a teacher. He was one of my science teachers, and he also was sort of the lifting facility instructor kind of guy. He was a military guy and really strong himself. But he was the one that helped us all at the gym. And one day I was kind of not putting full effort in, which really wasn't uncommon of me on the football team at the time because I wasn't so dedicated to it, but I wasn't really putting my effort into it. Like I said, I was always a bigger, stronger person anyway. And he walked up to me and I was sitting on a machine. I don't remember much about high school, but I remember this day forever. He walked up to me, I was sitting on a machine. I think it was just like an arm press machine. And I was more just talking to the guy next to me, not really using a really low weight, just kind of going through the motions. He walked up to me and said, you have so much potential. You're one of the biggest, strongest people on this team. You have so much potential and you're just letting it slip away. And that's all I said. You walked away. It wasn't a John, you need to work harder. You know, you could be great if you worked harder. It was just you're failing yourself because you're not trying. And that was unfortunately like in my senior year. So I couldn't turn it around with football, but I could let it affect the rest of my life. I wasn't going to get a football scholarship the next year because I tried to work harder, but I did. I worked harder because he was the first person that put it on me and didn't say, you have to do this because you have to go to college and then you have to be great. He's the first person to say, you could be great, but it's up to you. Hmm.
Have you talked to him since then? Have you ever told him thanks for that?
Last year, I ran into him at what airport was I in? I want to say it was maybe in Philadelphia or something. Ran into him at the airport. He was on a layover to get back to Toledo.
Wow.
So I got a chance to chat with him for a good hour there. But I had sent him a couple emails before, and he said, yeah. And he responded, and he told me about the emails I sent him. He remembered that I sent them, and I knew he wasn't lying because he remembered the content. But apparently his emails didn't go back to the right place or went to an old email address I sent him to him. So I emailed him a couple times just to catch up, but it was awesome. It was one of those weird little things in life. I got a chance to chat with him for an hour and just tell him, hey, you changed my life. And that was really, I was almost in tears half the time we were talking. Cool.
That's awesome that you got that opportunity.
Yeah.
You are not only an architect in our firm, but you're also the president-elect of the Cincinnati American Institute of Architects chapter. So talk a little bit about what that means to you and your tenure, which is coming up next year, and what you hope to accomplish.
So I realized pretty quick, there's a lot of great architects doing some really cool things with some really good ideas. And I realized that my involvement with an organization like the AIA wasn't going to be me coming in and saying, these are the 10 things that we need to do to make everything awesome in Cincinnati or make architecture awesome in Cincinnati. My ability that I'd be able to bring to the table is to rally the troops, to come in and say, look, there are, you know, almost 500 members just members of AIA Cincinnati, but then there's how many other architects in Cincinnati who aren't members who all have really exciting, really good ideas. Let's start to smash them together and see what happens and start to share resources and make each other aware of how much awesome stuff is actually happening in Cincinnati.
You know, we've been in a a global pandemic for 3 months. We're in the middle of some political protesting. How does architecture address these kinds of issues?
A straight white male who 5 years ago, almost 6 years ago, had my first child who happened to be a girl, mm-hmm. and started to become more aware of the challenges she was going to have to face mm-hmm. in her life. Mm-hmm. As a person who always thought I was a part of the solution, not part of the problem, I realized pretty quick that by not being a bad person, that wasn't necessarily fixing any problems. And I realized that my silence has been a real problem. The first question that came to mind is how, you know, what do I do? Because obviously as a straight white guy, I hear the criticism when I come in and say, hey, why don't we do this to fix this? And I have not approached it the right way. And it took a lot of trial and error to realize that I don't know what I'm doing, and that just by coming in and stating an answer to some of these really tough questions, it's hard to do that without showing my privilege in life. There we go.
The profession, historically has been male-dominated, generally Caucasian-dominated, although changing.
Yeah.
How does the architecture profession address these kinds of issues? One is a global pandemic.
Yeah.
The other one is civil rights and racial injustices based on history and legacy.
Yeah. Well, it's tough because the global pandemic one is, I don't even really like talking about it a whole lot just because of the fact that it is such a technical issue. It's definitely a huge collaborative effort between a lot of people that affect our environments. But the social, it comes down to a lot more personal level. So as I've been digging into this personally, soul searching, trying to figure out how I actually can affect this, what I've realized is that I haven't been listening. I've been trying to tell everybody what I think my ideas are to make the world equally, disproportionately happy for everybody, and promote equality by telling people what would make things equal. But that's not what I needed to be doing. I needed to be listening more. And when I started listening, which I guess this has been a very long journey to get to this point, sadly, and I'm very, very frustrated with myself that it did take this long, but I think it's something we all need to do as a point of self-reflection. But I think we just need to listen more and to give people, everybody, the opportunity to speak their minds in an arena where they feel like they can speak their minds. Because even every time I have approached a friend who may be a racial minority in architecture, and I ask them their thoughts, it's not easy if they can't just start spouting stuff out because they haven't had the opportunity to really talk and be heard and be listened. They're kind of used to the same rhetoric of, we hear you, and then nothing ever changes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I've been really, really focusing on conveying the message of we need to listen and we need to act accordingly once we've listened and given people the chance to communicate.
So what's being done nationally, locally, at the American Institute of Architects to maybe address lack of diverse membership, lack of architecture graduates, lack of diversity in the profession? What kinds of things is the Institute doing?
I, like a lot of people, and I'm not trying to downplay anything else, there's been a lot of really great efforts, and I know that some are ongoing, some really good efforts to address some of these social issues. But a lot of them are straight white men who are saying, here is something I think will help add some inclusion to the profession, add some equality to the profession. There are ideas. And the fact of the matter is, those ideas aren't necessarily universal.
Sure.
So if somebody has an idea for something, we need to not try to steer it and micromanage it as an organization. We just need to let things happen naturally. It's a combination of listening to the problems and then offering resources.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, good.
This is evolving. Like I said, I put a lot of stuff in the last 5 or 6 years, and sadly, only the last 5 or 6 years. Again, it's evolving. I'm trying to listen as much as possible and figure out what I can be doing. I'll say that. I'll speak for myself, what I can be doing through organizations like AIA.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, good. Well, good. We talk about exceptional people, inspired experiences. So as an architect and a leader in architecture, is there a place, space, or experience in the built environment that has inspired you?
Yeah, so I already hit on Omaha and the Woodman Tower.
Omaha.
Critically important to me. There's a lot of great things in Omaha. I love the city of Omaha, but the Woodman Tower was the important one. The one that really put me in awe was the Carpenter Center in Boston, which I know is the only Corbusier building in the United States, but I've heard it wasn't. I heard Corbusier had nothing to do with it. But a bit of a science nerd and a tech nerd, and I've always had this concept of, you know, play noodles, this concept of introducing time into architecture. And the Carpenter Center and on Harvard campus was the first building that I ever thought, wow, this is it. This is a building that I can see in plan and section and elevation at the same time. There's a tunnel that walks right through the middle of it, so you're inside and outside at the same time. That was the first time I think I had an idea in architecture as a young learning architect while I was still in school. The first time I went to a building, I thought, okay, this is one of my ideas already realized. I think that there is something to my young ideas. I'm not just a doof kid with weird ideas that'll never work, and eventually I'm going to have to abandon them when I become a grown-up. Real ideas and stuff actually happens. So that was probably the most profound experience I've ever had in a building.
That's a good one. How does what you do impact or shape inspired experiences in the built environment for others?
Good question. What I do personally, I like to think of myself as a bit of a small details person. I like to get in. I've always been inspired by Alvar Aalto's approach to design, and that he liked to focus on the things we touch. Sometimes I think we like to think of architecture as too big, and we forget to think about it at the human scale. So that's where I think I'm pretty good at bringing things down to the human scale on a project to think of, like, okay, what is one person walking through this space to think, or how are they actually going to experience this the way we'd like them to experience it? Or is that just the architect in us thinking, oh yeah, they're going to walk through this grand big thing, and it's going to be this special inspiring moment. But what are they actually going to see as a non-architect, as a person walking through a space? What are they going to touch? What are they going to smell? So I think that's what I bring to my work is the focus on those little details.
Is there a particular detail or particular project as you look back in your career that kind of was an aha moment, something that you yourself worked on the design or editing or modification?
Yeah, some of my best experiences have come just being able to focus on a door instead of 400 doors. But yeah, I think that's where I've been able to really think, like, oh yeah, all I have is one door handle to think about here. How can I make it special?
So are there any trends or issues, you know, affecting the built environment related that you think are really influencing design, construction? You know, what are some of the things that are influencing it from your perspective as an architect?
I'd say the thing that I'm trying to pay most attention to is the use of data in our buildings. For data-driven design, but data for building analysis and related to the Internet of Things and connectivity of a building components. I would probably sound, I'm an amateur with this stuff. It's just what I'm trying to read on the weekends, basically. So I probably don't sound too futuristic. I'm sure a lot of this stuff's already happening all over the world. But data is, I mean, it's essentially a future form of currency. It has a lot of value. And this, what seems like a utopian view of the future in architecture, how it informs pretty much every aspect of our project, how we can use data to extract information from everything from fabrication to, you know, not necessarily even the fabrication of a component for a building, but how do we fabricate the tool that makes the piece that goes into a component that goes into our building. So there's a lot of levels that make it really interesting.
Okay. We also talk about enduring impact. So who or what has had an enduring impact on you, your career path, and what you do in the business of architecture?
Well, I already covered the science teacher that had an enduring impact. But I think something that what I thought was sort of a curse in life was turned out to be a bit of a blessing, in that I'm always listening to people who I think are successful and I think are doing things I'd like to be doing. Even when I was moving around schools and I was looking at the cool kids and trying to see what made them cool I didn't try to, I was, like I said, because I was so passive, I didn't run in and say, I'm Jeff Jaskowitz and I'm here now. I'm a cool kid. But I would kind of try to pay attention and emulate what people were doing. And it felt exhausting because I was constantly trying to do stuff to fit in. And that went all the way through college, really, until I started to make points. On top of that, I'm just not afraid to ask questions and talk to people and ask for help. So I'm regularly, well, I guess before COVID, regularly having lunch or coffee or adult beverage with people who I think are doing interesting things, just to ask questions. It amazes me how few people are really willing to exercise the resources that are right in front of them. And people that want to do great things with their career, and they're sitting right next to somebody who's doing great things and never even ask them, mm-hmm. hey, what helped you get to where you are? What makes your work so great? Or just how did you get to where you wanted to be? I think there's a lot to be said for just learning from other people's experiences. And from my experience too, I can't believe I've never had somebody just say, leave me alone, I don't want to talk to you. Everybody wants to share their story, and everybody Absolutely. Wants to help other people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's amazing. I'd say if I had to pick one person that has the most enduring impact on my career, I'd say it's probably 1,000 people who have no idea how much of an effect that they have on yeah. my career, because I don't think about something they told me.
Mm-hmm. Architecture is a profession where it is now. What does it need to do differently moving forward to be relevant and successful?
So this has been a really interesting topic of discussion, because I find myself in a really weird middle ground where I'm experienced, but I haven't been around a lot for very long. And I'm in a lot of leadership positions, but I'm very fresh to the leadership positions, and I don't have a history of leadership positions or holding leadership roles. And I don't really know a whole lot, even much about the recent past, the recent history of the profession and what has led us to get where we are. So I hear a lot of stories, and I kind of do some research that has done on topics that have contributed to why the profession is in the state it's in. And the biggest concept that I think is interesting to talk about, specifically with people that have been around a while, people that are new to the profession, is the concept of risk. Because it sounds like a lot of why we are where we are, the things that we're upset about with the profession have been a result of mitigating risk in the past by defining means and methods versus design intent. You know, means and methods versus design intent. And I don't know exactly when that came about, but I think we've relinquished a lot of areas where we can have more control over our building, more control over the built environment, more control over our keys. More control over the way we interact with our clients. I think it sounds like it's mostly self-inflicted that we relinquish that willingly. Mm-hmm. So the big question is, you know, how are we getting that back? Because I think it is actually actively happening with architects who are exploring other fields. I think a lot of people are doing some really interesting stuff that is not considered a conventional architecture path. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes they get criticized for it because they, quote unquote, you know, maybe abandoned architecture or got rid of it, but really they're just finding new opportunities to engage with the built environment through sure. the entire process that a lot of people are afraid to look at, I think. So mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of people who are doing great things for architecture who a lot of people would not consider to be doing something that is of architecture. And that may just be technology, maybe fabrication, maybe some other form of research and something that doesn't look like it's part of architecture, but the intent is to make the architecture profession better. So that's the biggest topic, and I wish I had more answers for it, but on, you know, how we get back some of that risk that it seems like we've been pushing to give away for the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the big part of it, is how do we take some of that back? How do we take ownership, more ownership of our project, and be not so risk averse?
Yeah. You're preaching to the choir, John. And I think an interesting point you bring up is how many architecture graduates are either never went into the traditional profession once they got out of college, whatever level they did, bachelor's or master's, or how many of them yeah. have left either because of more opportunities, more financial reward. The 2008 to 2010 recession drove a whole, I'm a little older than you are, drove a whole bunch of my peers out, who are now doing, probably half of them doing other things and successful. And I'm curious to see what the current pandemic, you know, there is going to be a dip in architecture profession. We know that's coming and it's happening right now. You know, who will find new paths, and what will those new paths be in the coming years as a result of this current dip right now. So I thank
you. It's funny because I feel like as we started relinquishing some of these responsibilities, and then other people are finding them as new opportunities, now we're hiring them back to work with them as consultants on things. Like, I have friends who are in the world of acoustics, mm-hmm. or, you know, really high-end glass design, and they work for glass manufacturers. Well, at some point, architects did all that work, the glass manufacturer. The architects were doing a lot of that work. So it's funny, now we're bringing that back in as consultants, and they're taking a bigger chunk of the pie now.
What have you learned or seen in your career that you would bring forward or offer as advice to other individuals, organizations, so that they can have an impact on what they do?
I think that my biggest challenge to any organization would be to not think outside the box, but think outside the bubble. I think it's easy to say we think outside the box, and it's easy to think outside the box. It's easy to think about, you know, the things that immediately affect the work that we're doing or the initiatives that we have. Mm-hmm. But what's not easy to do is get outside of the bubble, get outside of the atmosphere, and look at the world holistically, mm-hmm. And think about, you know, experiences we have outside of, you know, my cubicle or my desk, my immediate surroundings, my building, my city. We kind of get stuck in that bubble. That usually, I think, in my experience, talking to people, that bubble is usually the city level, the city of Cincinnati. It's hard to really get past that and think like, wow, things are happening differently all over the place. And yes, there's a lot of environmental response to that. Culture is different in New York City than it is in Cincinnati. You know, clients expect different things in New York City as opposed to Cincinnati. Everything's a little bit different, but there's something to be learned from all that. And I think it's refreshing sort of to get out of that. I don't know if people realize how much stress that they're putting on themselves by honing in on our immediate environment, just a little box that we're just outside of, which is good. It's a good first step, but I think really pushing it to some of the outside factors, some of the things that we hadn't even thought of before. This is one of the, as I've been thinking a lot lately about the architecture firm of tomorrow, the practice of tomorrow. Something I think we professionals, and I think this is not just architecture, but every profession, is to envision what the architecture firm of tomorrow looks like. Let's say 10 years, 20 years from now, given the tools that we have, the way we think things are going, it's easy to do that, to think about where things are going to be in 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
But it's hard to backtrack, to actually follow the path, back channel it all the way back to this, every individual step we need to do to get there. I think it's easy to prospect on what we could do today that might lead to a better architecture of tomorrow. But to actually back channel, to set goals and benchmark for what you should be doing in 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, to see what's actually feasible, I think that's a different story. I think that's my experience, is just saying, like, let's step back, let's be realistic. What can we accomplish? Where can we get a win today that will lead to a win tomorrow, that will lead to a win then? And in 15 years, we have the architecture firm of tomorrow.
Yeah, it's about baby steps, right? That famous, that famous Bill Murray movie, Richard Dreyfuss, Baby Steps. You know, what about Bob? I found that's key in all professions. What do architects do that has an enduring impact on their communities?
So the way I'm trying to have an impact on my community is to say, okay, these are all great ideas. We have this town hall, and there's 40 great ideas on how we can make our communities better in whichever ways, in 40 different ways. Now let's take a step back and think, first off, who's in charge of this? How are you going to manage it? And what are we going to do to get there? What are the actual action steps? Because that's where we miss out on. The conversation usually just ends with, these are 40 great ideas, and then everybody walks away. So I think that's how I've been trying to have the most impact on our communities, but not necessarily bringing the good idea to the table, but trying to get it, distill it down to something that's actually attainable. I think a lot of people have a really hard time of actually gauging time itself and realizing, you know, the example that I can give is, if you have a year goal and you want to accomplish something in a year, and you think, okay, let's analyze this and say it's going to take 500 hours to get there, 500 hours of the work to get there in a year. Because a lot of these initiatives and things that are going on in our communities start small. They start with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people. And I think building success and momentum into them is the way to add people to that. Instead of thinking this as a standalone project, this is what I'm going to accomplish in the next year. It's how do we make this incrementally successful, but also make it so it brings more people in because it is successful.
Well, I can't thank you enough for being a part of today's discussion and talking to us as, you know, our incoming president-elect of the Cincinnati AIA, and look forward to seeing what you're going to do with the chapter when you take over. Tell us, how can folks learn a little bit more about the American Institute of Architects and specifically the Cincinnati chapter, which you're going to be the leader of next year?
Well, I think the first thing you need to learn more is erase all your preconceived notions of what everybody says about the AIA and how everybody hates it because it doesn't do anything for us. Just erase what it is, and if whatever you think you've heard about the organization, because they're all antiquated opinions, and then talk to somebody about it, because there are a lot of us who genuinely want to make the profession better for architects in whatever way we can, and we're happy to help in any way possible, whether you're bringing ideas or want to be part of a solution. Just talk to somebody and get out of this negative mentality of, it doesn't do anything, why should I do something? Why should I talk to you? So, just talk to someone. Our phone number is all listed. You know where the website is.
Go to the website, look for AIA Cincinnati, and get a hold of John.
Call me. I'll chat.
All right, Chief. Well, it's always good to talk to you. I can't wait till we can co-office again together. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
And best to you and your family in all of these strange times.
You too. Thanks a lot, Bill. That was fun.
Thanks, Chief. Bye.
See ya.
Thank you for joining us on today's podcast. Building Ideas is presented by MSA Design. To learn more about MSA Design, visit us on the web at www.msaarch.com.